everybody listening to the Writer's Process Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I'm here with the awesome, the amazing Eric Sputik. How you doing, Eric?
I'm doing pretty good, man. I'm surviving this corona.
I know, seriously. Have you been staying at home a lot?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of forced to stay at home right now. I'm having vehicle problems, so I can't really go anywhere. And then, plus, it's been raining a lot, and today was just too hot. It's like 80-something degrees out there, maybe 90 degrees.
Yeah, I came out of my friend's house and went into a car, and I was in a hoodie. It's in a big hoodie, and I realized, good God, it's hot out here.
Yeah, it's almost summertime, man.
I know. Okay, so when we originally met, let's talk about this real quick. So when we originally met, because we were friends on, what, Facebook for a while, I think, or MySpace even.
MySpace. Yeah,
we've been friends since MySpace. So, and then we, I think we're at Texas Frightmare. I don't know if it was 2010 or 11. No, it was one of those.
2011, because I had 11. Just moved there.
Okay. Yeah, so we were at 9 years ago. Yeah, so we were there, and you just, like, you walk up to me. I remember, you walk up to me, and you go, hey, are you Jonathan Moody? And I was like, yeah. And you're like, Eric Sputik. I'm like, oh, crap, you know? Like, this is awesome. And so we met there. We talked for a little bit, you know, or whatever, hung out. Then I moved to Baton Rouge for, like, a month. It did not last very long. Last longer here already, you know? But I was like drinking and doing all this other shit back then, that I don't do anymore. I remember on, was it July 4th? I asked you to come over to hang out, to meet, you know, or not meet, but we already met, but like hang out and chat at the, old, apartment in Baton Rouge. So I don't know if you remember that or not. Cause
I remember it was, I guess, was that 2012.
Yeah.
Well, I just moved to Baton Rouge then.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you had. I remember because you were talking about that. You were talking about how you had just moved, so you were just kind of getting to know the area or whatever, and you couldn't figure a place to park or something, you know, or whatever at the time for the place I was at.
It was so cheap over there, man. The cost of living in Louisiana is just dirt cheap.
I know. And that wasn't even like the cost of living wasn't the problem. The problem was I had no motivation and I didn't go out and like, I was trying to work with Active Entertainment or something, but then they never got back to me about stuff or whatever. So I just kind of was lazy and wasn't trying to like look for other, you know, work. And then I ended up just saying, screw it. I'm going to move back home about a month after. And I was scared like that would happen again. And like, this is even further from Virginia. So I'm like, I don't really want to drive all the way back to Virginia, you know?
But yeah, I was going to say that's 3 days or 4 days, isn't it?
Depends on, you know, if you go straight, like my friend and I did, we went across country. My buddy Paul, who's part of Indie Film Cafe and everything, we went from, we went to like different states and stayed at different hotels and stuff. But I'm sure if I had just done like 16 hours days or something, or 20 hour days, not 20 hours, that's long. That's a long fucking day, but you know, like enough before I start getting tired, you know what I mean? I could do it, but I really don't want to. Like, I would rather stay here and try to make a living doing this stuff. So I'm working on it. But this coronavirus has kind of gotten everybody down. But the beauty is when it comes to writing, you know, to bring it back to the writer's process thing, that like it's easy to just write now, you know, like you have no real excuse right now, you know, to not write. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Plus the environment helps too. I mean, you got empty streets, you got people wearing masks, you know, there's hardly any traffic out there. It's just this overwhelming sense of dread, like we feel doomed right now, that you know, it's the end of days, and it's like, okay, let's write. I'm sure everybody's writing post-apocalyptic stories and, you know, sci-fi meteors crashing into the earth, asylum movies.
Yeah, We were just talking about Collision Earth. Like, apparently that's coming out next week, and I had no idea. The movie I'm in comes out, well, will be out by the time this interview is out, hopefully. So you guys can go check that out if you like The Asylum. Are you a big fan of The Asylum yourself?
I do like The Asylum, not so much in the beginning. I do like Bloody Bill. Evil Eyes was okay. I guess I started liking them a lot around the time of Dead Men Walking and Rise of the Zombies. Their zombie films are top-notch. They're really, really good.
Yeah, I got into them through Beast of Bray Road, you know, because I actually knew on Facebook or MySpace or something. I think it was MySpace back then. It was MySpace. But I knew Matt Kaczynski, who was in it. And so I was excited. I was like, oh, my God, this is Matt's movie, the movie he was in. And I watched it because he was in that and he was in Frankenstein Reborn, both Lee Scott films. And I discovered The Asylum through that. And ever since then, like, because I had a really crappy day. And then that movie, Beast of Bray Road, really, like, I don't know, this stuff on sci-fi always makes me smile, you know? Like,
that was 2005. That was a long time ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. But that got me into, well, I think it was 2006 when I discovered, because it was on sci-fi in 2006, yeah. And that kind of started, like, that was the year I started my original podcast, which you've been on, the Independent Corner Radio Show, so.
Yeah, I think I did that in 2008,
mm-hmm.
maybe 2009, so that's a long time ago.
I believe it was 2008 or so, because I was looking back, trying to remember when I first did a interview with Jackie Hall, you know, to know, like, you know, how long I've known her, you know, and it was 12 years. And I was like, holy crap, like, time flies, you know, like 12 years ago. That's
my old roommate, Chris Watson, actually worked on Dorm of the Dead.
Oh, wow. That for real. What did he do on it?
I don't really know. I think he did craft service, catering, maybe special effects. I think he did a bunch of stuff. I don't think he just did one job. Yeah, that was like 2006, I think. So that was a long time ago. It's like time just flies in this whole business.
Right. Well, Jackie hates that movie. Like,
oh, really?
You can't even, you say the name to her, she automatically gags. Like it's real. Like, it's not like she's just doing it as like, ah. Like, it just like that just brings back so many, I guess, because it's one of her first films, you know, that she did and everything. And it was kind of a learning experience. She loves Donald Farmer and everything. Mm-hmm. And Chainsaw Cheerleaders is the movie that I got introduced to her by, you know, because I hadn't seen Dorm of the Dead, I don't think, before I saw Chainsaw Cheerleaders. And then I interviewed the Chainsaw Cheerleaders. I interviewed them with Donald, and Jackie was there, and that's how we ended up becoming MySpace friends, and then ended up becoming like best friends, which was,
you know, cool. Lee Scott's in Louisiana now.
Yeah.
So we move out and then Lee Scott moves in. I mean, I would have loved to have worked with him.
Actually, he was there first. He was there back, cause he did Active Entertainment back in the day. So he was there. He had moved. He went from here, LA, to the other LA, and did Active Entertainment. So he did like a ton of different movies back then. Like, he produced like Wolfsbane and the Dunwich Horror and stuff. And then he went on to New York and did like Witches of Oz and all the stuff there. And now he's back in Louisiana, but with his own production company. Uh-huh. So that's so cool. Like, you know, looking back at that.
And I submitted resumes to Active Entertainment, and I never heard back either. I mean, I don't know.
I think they're just like, it's kind of like who you know there, you know? If maybe I might have worked with them if Lee had recommended me or something, you know? But, and I think, because I did get like an email from them, you know, saying whatever, but, and then I called them, but they were just not, you know, it's just like, I tried to work for Full Moon, you know, and they just don't have anything for me right now, you know, like there's production work. I could have probably been on the set of the quarantine movie, the Corona Zombies movie, but I just didn't know, you know, had I known that that's what they were doing, I would have came on and helped out. But
I think they shot that in like one day, the new footage, because it's mostly old footage, you know?
Yeah, I heard about that. So many people are upset at that, that it's only like, because it does like takes different movies and stuff that I guess that they have the rights to or something, or maybe don't.
Hell of the Living Dead.
Yeah, things like that. And then just put them all in one movie, you know, with some new footage added. They did that. Didn't they do that with like Puppet Masters or something?
Yeah, there's Puppet Master the Legacy, which is part 8,
yeah,
is 10 minutes of brand new footage, and the rest of it is stock footage from the other films, you know, it's flashbacks.
Exactly. So I think they've, you know, that's the, I mean, they're the king of that. Uh-huh. Which is, you know, whatever. If I just I, like, that's my least favorite Puppet Master, just because like it's like you know, it's a clip episode, you know.
Yeah, it's not even a movie. It's just, I don't know, but you know, Charlie Band, he knows how to make money though.
He's got mine. I buy Full Moon Streaming, you know. I don't really watch it as much. Okay, so I have to know this because you're a physical media guy, you know, pretty much. You love DVDs and Blu-rays.
Oh, yeah, and in fact, right back here. Look at this.
Nice.
Oh my God.
Are these yours or are these ones you're selling? Crash, the Charlie Band movie.
Yeah, these are just ones that I'm selling.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I know you sell a lot. So you got your Sputnik movie empire, you know, that you
My
sell.
Whole apartment is stuff for sale. It's really bad. You can't even walk in here.
I don't think you can see. Maybe you can right there. Can you see those? Down there?
Oh wow, man! VHS.
Those aren't all of them. What?
Is that VHS or DVDs? No,
those are DVDs and Blu-rays.
Oh, cool, man! One of these
days
we're gonna
have
a movie.
Just some, but like, give you an example of the stuff I got here. I'm not selling any of these. I could sell some. You know, but I kind of like, I mean, I love my collection. So I got like stuff like Shockwave, which is still in the wrapping because I haven't watched it yet.
Directed by Jim Wynorski.
Oh, my, that's right. Jay Andrews is Jim Wynorski. Oh, my goodness. He does so much. I just don't even know anymore. Then I've got this like 8-pack. Uh-huh. And I don't know. It's got one of my favorite ones on there. Like, it's got an 8-pack of, like, Snow Beast, but it's also got Blood Predator. Have you ever heard of that movie?
Yeah, I actually have that movie.
Really? It is awful, but wonderful in the same time. We did it for Indie Film Cafe. Then I've got, like, Super Croc.
Hey, do you know who's in that movie? Me.
You?
Yeah. I'm at the very beginning.
Nice. So that was one of your Asylum movies, huh?
Yeah, I think I got paid $25 a day or $50 a day. And they tried to wrap me after day number 2. And I said, guys, we still have like a page of dialogue to shoot. And they're like, oh, okay. Maybe we'll have to have you come back another day. And so, I came back the next day. It's like they just were not prepared.
Well, I've heard not so good things about the director himself, Scott Harper, who I don't know if he's still alive.
He died.
He died?
Yeah, about 12 years ago, 13 years ago.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah, he did this in Alien versus Hunter, and I've heard like that was a messed up set. Like that was worse than Super Croc. You know, they were just way, like, nobody knew what they were doing, you know, or whatever, and, you know, and stuff. But, you know, one of those things that I know one day, I know we'll do Alien versus Hunter on Indie Film Cafe. It might be one of the ones this season, but I'm not sure. Okay. I can't say yet because I don't even know. But anyway, like, also like 30 movie packs and all of these fun Pendulum Pictures movie packs and Circus Kane, you know?
Oh yeah, I saw that on the big screen.
Did you?
Yeah, nice. With like 300 people in the audience.
That's awesome. So anyway, yeah, I've just got a whole bunch of B movies that I, a lot of them I need to watch, you know, and review for B movie lockdown, you know, and stuff, but we'll see. But you know, once again, you're a big B movie guy. Like you love this stuff, you know, and everything. And you've written a few B movies, especially ones, cause I just interviewed Joe Castro for, Frights of the Round Table. And he was awesome. Like he was showing us all these different stuff that he did. But you did like, didn't you do like The Hazing with him? And
yeah, I wrote three of Joe's movies, Maniacal, Evil Unleashed, and yeah, The Hazing was actually called Butchered.
Butchered, yeah.
That was back in 2002. It's like, oh my God.
Which title was yours? Butchered or The Hazing?
Yeah, neither. I think what was my title? Or maybe I did call it Butchered. Yeah, I guess I did. Dave Sterling wanted to call it The Hazing. And I said, Rolf Konevsky's making a movie called The Hazing. And he goes, well, let's get ours out first. And I said, no, you can't do that. I said, let's call it something else. I remember, yeah, Butchered.
Wow. that sounds like Dave right there. You know, like,
yeah.
Just let's do it. Let's get it out there before they do, you know, like that's funny.
I think I wrote five movies for Dave Sterling. He cranks them out. I think he's done 8 or 9 Camp Blood films by now.
Or in the witchcraft thing, he's making that like one of the longest series in the horror genre, you know? So he's going to do probably like more witchcraft movies eventually. And yeah, he's cranking shit out like constantly, which is wonderful for him, you know? The sad thing is like, I just don't have the money to buy his movies. So I look forward to them on Amazon Prime when I get a chance to watch them, you know, because he puts them on there, which kind of, I think only sort of defeats the purpose of buying them, you know, or whatever. Like, why would somebody want to buy something when they can get it for free? You know, like maybe to own it, but still, you know, you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I just got to have the artwork and I want to listen to the commentary. I want the behind the scenes, the interviews, deleted scenes, alternate ending.
Well, what I've noticed is that a lot more movies are kind of going in the way of like no commentary and stuff and extras. Like I remember I was talking to a filmmaker, screw it, I'll say his name. I love him to death, so this isn't like a harsh thing on him. But it was Chris Sieber, you know, who I adore, and I think he's awesome. You know, he's a great guy and he makes fun movies. But I always loved his commentary tracks. And then all of a sudden he was telling me, like, do you want the movie or are you only getting it for the commentary track? You know, right? And that's why he started doing them like all bare bones. And I'm like, I mean, I like both. I like the movie and I like listening to what it took to make the movie, you know?
Yeah, I want to hear about the making of Filthy McNasty Part 2.
You haven't heard that yet? Have you
not? Yeah, is there only, is there two of them or three?
There's four.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's Filthy McNasty, Filthy McNasty-er, Maximum Douche, Filthy McNastiest, Apocalypse Fuck, I think was the total title of that one, but I don't think they put that on the cover. It's just Filthy McNastiest. And then was it the last one was called, originally it was called The Son of McNasty, but then they changed it to Beyond Filthy McNasty for Beyond McNasty or something. So that
wow.
One, yeah.
I'm so, out of the loop.
Well, I mean, like for a while I was contacting Chris all the time saying, hey, when can I get your next movie? When I can, you know, right? It's like almost like a drug fix, you know, give me, you know, here's $10, give me your next movie, you know, or $15, whatever. And then he hasn't really, he's made a lot of stuff with Warlock, you know, Entertainment, but or home video, but I haven't really been paying as much attention because I don't know, just maybe just haven't, because there's so much out there, you know, for me to, you know, get, you know what I mean? Like, so tell us, so are a lot of your films available on like Amazon Prime or Tubi?
Amazon Prime, I really don't know. I know Landshark is on there.
Giant, I loved Landshark, by the way. I love it. I think I texted you when I was watching it and I was telling you how much I enjoyed it because that movie is so goofy and fun and just silly. And Mark Polonia is I think for Shark Attack Sunday, one of our bits, we're definitely going to do we're going to review Landshark. But you know, cuz we just did Sharkenstein, so for Indie Film Cafe. I don't know if you saw that one yet.
I think I did. I bought it at Walmart, if I remember correctly.
On the three pack? Because they had like a three pack that had Sharkenstein, Raiders of the Lost Shark, and what was the other one? Shark Exorcist, directed by Donald Farmer.
I think that was only $5 at Walmart. And it's like, how are these movie makers making money, you know, selling a three pack $5? It's like, I don't know.
I don't know either, but like it makes its money, you know, somehow or whatever, you know. I do want to bring back, you did mention that your roommate was Chris Watson, who did the amazing Zombiegeddon. And Chris and I've interviewed Chris a bunch of times and chatted with him. Like, he's a great guy. And then you were actually in Zombiegeddon, if I'm correct, right? You're like a zombie in Zombiegeddon.
Yeah, I was a zombie. I'm probably on screen for like 1 second.
Right. And were you on the commentary track, I want to say?
Yeah, I was on the commentary track. I don't know if I really said much of anything. We were in a hotel room, and it was Chris and I, Lynn Kabasinski was there, Brink Stevens. There was like 10 of us in this hotel room, and it was just kind of awkward to jump in and talk on the commentary track. I still have that DVD. You know, I'm on the bonus features on like top 10 ways to masturbate or something.
Well, I do remember they also had a Eric Spudik interview with you, I think, or something, you know, on the Troma release. So I don't know.
Oh, you know, I interviewed Brink Stevens. That's right. Right after her scene, she was in her hotel room and Chris goes, why don't we do an interview? And he's like, Eric, you know her movies. Because I guess he didn't really know her movies that well. And so I guess I asked her some good questions. I don't remember. That was so long ago. I was so nervous.
Well, that movie's so great because it does one thing that that at that time a lot of people were trying to do, which was put all the B-movie stars in one movie, right, if they can. And, I mean, that was like a list of people like Joe Estevez and Robert Zadar and Brink Stevens, Conrad Brooks. I mean, the list goes on. I actually want to show it. At some point, we do another segment on Indie Film Cafe called What the Fuck Friday. And I think it's a perfect What the Fuck Friday movie, you know? Oh. Yeah, it's beautiful. I love that movie. And it's fun. Like, it's a fun movie. It's not boring or bad, you know? Like, it's just silly and goofy, you know?
He's out in Kansas now. He hasn't made a movie in, I don't know, 11 years or so.
He did, yeah. He did, I think, was a Dead...
Dead in Love?
Dead in Love. I love that. I did enjoy that movie. He sent me a copy of it when we were discussing everything. So, it was fun. You know, it was enjoyable. So, I like that movie. Let's see. You know, you've been doing a lot of writing, period, for your whole life, right? Like, since, you know,
quarter of a century now, 25 years, I think.
When did you start writing?
I started writing when I was 15 or 16. I actually started out as a songwriter first. I mean, I was a screenwriter, but nothing was selling. And then I sold two songs. That was in 98. And then I got the royalties for the songs. The royalties were horrible. I quit my job at the video store thinking I was going to make a lot of money. I was like, hey, I got some residuals coming in. I should be getting like $5,000 checks, you know, $50 checks, $100 checks. I was like, screw this. I'm going to go back to screenwriting. And then suddenly I get an acting job in a movie. So I flew out to Hollywood and did that. But meanwhile, I was like, I really don't want to be an actor. I want to write. And I just kept writing and I kept pestering all these producers until finally Dave Sterling says, hey, I want you to write a movie for me. I want you to remake Halloween. Just watch Halloween and just totally rip it off, but with more tits and more gore. And I said, okay. And so I did that. I think I wrote Maniacal in like 5 days.
Nice. I was going to ask which one that is. And that's awesome that that you worked with Joe too, like in a way. Like, were you on set for most of it or anything?
No, I lived in Illinois at the time. So oh, wow. I met Dave Sterling in 2002 because I flew out and I said, hey, we should meet. And then suddenly he puts me to work on his movie, Got.
Nice.
That was a mistake. I was just going to visit the set and hang out 17 hours later. I was like, can I finally go home? I was so sleepy. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning.
That's the thing with indie films is like a lot of times they're longer than like a Hollywood's allowed to do it, you know? Uh-huh. So, you know, you just do what you can as an actor, you know, especially if you're not a SAG actor, you know what I mean? You got to do what they tell you to do.
In fact, speaking of movies that I wrote, I just went over to Jeff Leroy's place and I picked up, here it is, the special edition of Creepies.
Nice.
That starring Ron Jeremy. This version has two different versions of Creepies. It has some music videos, director commentary, bloopers, trailers, and apparently it's widescreen too. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Nice. Well, that's great because Jeff Leroy is one of those guys too that's in the business doing a lot of stuff. So we're gonna talk B movies real quick again. What is your what would you say is the stinkiest movie that you've seen? You know, like the movie that you and you can say that you love it, you know, or whatever if you do, but like something that's really, really bad. You know, but kind of fun.
The Crawlers with the killer trees.
The Crawlers.
Yeah, have you seen that?
No.
Filmed in Utah. It's unofficially Troll 3. It's from the director of Troll 2. He did it right afterwards, like 6 months, maybe a year later. It's really bad. It's awful. But I mean, you just gotta watch it. I mean, it's just I don't know. It's entertaining. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's got killer trees, you know, twigs and roots and stuff.
That sounds awesome. Where can people find that? I'm wondering.
I just sold one on Amazon. It's on Blu-ray, if you can believe that.
I can these days because like a lot of stuff goes out because, you know, people want to see it, you know, uh-huh. But, let me see. Let me see if I can find it on. Okay, is it the one starring Don Paul Nigero?
I really don't know who was.
Yeah, that was a 2018 movie, so I'm pretty sure that's not it, right?
This was 1993.
Okay.
It just dawned on me on DVD. It's called Contamination 7.7. Yeah, on cable television, it was The Crawlers, and VHS was The Crawlers. I don't know why they changed the title after all these years.
I don't know. I guess I'll find it sometime, and we'll probably do it for Indie Film Cafe. Sounds like a wonderful, wonderful bad movie. I think there's been only in the history of Indie Film Cafe, there's only been one, like a couple like 30s because what we do is we do like one through 10 rating system, and we have three people do it, right? And so there'll be like me, Paul, and somebody else, right, or something. And we'll do a rating. And there's only been a few that have gotten three tens, you know, right? So 30. The first year, it was Fateful Findings by Neil Breen. Uh-huh. Are you aware of Neil Breen?
I know the name, but I don't know that movie.
It's awful, just bad. And then he did another one called what is it called? It's a twin movie. It's like an evil twin movie. Twisted Pair. You know.
Twisted Pair.
And that was our second, and that's also Neil Breen. And then to this year, we actually got our first 30 early on. And then we watched my roommate and her boyfriend watched Zombie Cop.
Oh, yeah, the J.R. Bookwalter movie.
Yes, and that got a 30. Yeah. Yes.
That is pretty bad. I love Bookwalter. And, you know, they shot that in like 5 days or something.
And it was the thing that really, like, I guess really pissed them off mainly is the was the racism and stuff. Like, there was some very, you know, very big racism stuff, issues with the movie and stuff. And, like, for this time period, you know, this is not, it's not appropriate, you know what I mean? But, like, you couldn't remake that movie the same exact way, you know, it was made or whatever. And then, so those are the only ones that have gotten 30, but the ones that people, like, I know I've hated was, I told you about Blood Predator before, and you said you have seen that, right?
Oh yeah, I got a copy of it right here.
Yeah,
it's okay, I guess. I mean, I don't know.
It's pretty bad. And then the other one, was it Actium Maximus?
Gosh,
it's a trauma movie.
Yeah, I guess I never saw that, but I remember the cover.
And the last one that I was thinking of is Barn of the Blood Llama. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one.
No. I mean, now that just sounds bad.
Yeah, right? And it's just terrible. But it's like, I think the filmmakers knew it was terrible, you know, so they just made it as bad as they can, you know? But like, it's not The Room bad, because like The Room, Tommy at least tried to make something that he thought was good, you know, and everything.
That film has caught on. Like, everybody knows The Room.
I just showed Jackie Disaster Artist. We were doing it for was it Blu-ray Hunter? We were reviewing it, and she freaking, okay, so she hasn't been like really laughing at newer stuff lately, you know, or anything. She hasn't been finding anything funny. She thought, like, I knew I got her with the Stella scene in the very beginning of the movie. You've seen Disaster Artist, right?
No, I have not.
What?
I've read the book, though.
Oh, my God, you need to see that. Like, it is, to me, it's like the new Ed Wood. And I might, because Ed Wood is my favorite movie of all time. That might be up there as, like, my favorite. Like, those might be tied right now.
Wow, that's cool. Because I love Ed Wood.
Yeah, no, it's very much like Ed Wood. It gives... James Franco does such a wonderful job just being James Franco, you know, but being Tommy, you know, I thought they were it was just wonderful. That you need to check that out at some point, because I think out of, you know, if you're a big fan of even they're very faithful to the book, but obviously they took a lot of stuff out of the book because they couldn't put everything in there, or it'd be a really long ass movie, you know? And so the stuff that I'm like, I've read the book and I was like, oh man, they left that out, you know? But if you go in kind of like not thinking about the book, you'll really, you know, I think you'll really love it.
You know, here's a story for you. 1999, I had just come out to Hollywood and I was hanging out with Dave DiCoto, and he goes, hey, I got to go to the airport and pick up my friend Greg. I said, oh, okay. It was Greg Sestero.
Nice.
And, he had just done Puppet Master, what's it called, Part 7.
Retro Puppet Master?
Yeah, Retro Puppet Master. And I was just in awe. I was like, dude, you're Andre Toulon. That's awesome. And I thought it was funny that he was even younger than me. I think I was 19 at the time, and maybe he was 18 or so.
Wow. I think that's funny.
Younger. I haven't seen him since. That was over 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I don't think he would remember me.
So how do you know David?
I used to write fan letters to Dave in Full Moon Entertainment, and he called me up one day. And he's like, you got a bunch of questions for me? I hear that you like my movies. And I said, I love your movies. I love Creepazoids and Sorority Babes. Puppet Master 3 is my favorite of the franchise. And he's like, well, any questions you have, just let me know. And so I would ask him any question I wanted, and it just became like a regular thing. Like every Saturday, I would call him and say, Dave, how much money did you have for this movie? And how many days of shooting for this film? And is there going to be a sequel? And where did you make that? I was just bothering him like crazy, but he didn't mind it. And then one day I showed him my first movie, Attack of the Bathroom Creature, about a killer poop monster.
Nice.
He goes, hey, if you ever come out to Hollywood, let me know. And I'll give you a tour of Full Moon Studios, and I'll introduce you to people like Fredel and Ray. And if I'm making a movie, maybe I'll put you in it. And so we've been friends ever since, you know, 21 years now.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I have literally seen 75, maybe 100 of Dave's movies, you know? So I don't know, man. I've seen a lot of them, that's for sure.
That's incredible. Like, to actually be like that close to, you know, like a person, you know what I mean?
And he introduced me to Fredel and Ray, J.R. Bookwalter, let's see, Charles Band, Albert Band. It was heaven going to Full Moon Entertainment. Dave Parker was there. He was kind of just starting out. I mean, it was a good time, man. I should write a book about that time period, you know?
Right. You know, that's awesome. You know, like that's one of the coolest things in the world is to be, you know, a fan of somebody. And they like, I'll say Kevin Smith is one of the people that really inspired me when I was younger to want to pursue writing and directing and everything. And the fact that I've met him like twice already, you know, in my life and everything. And then, like each time he's just super cool, you know.
Like, do you ever slip him copies of your movies? Say, hey, Kevin, here's my newest movie, man.
I haven't. I have given copies of my movies to people at conventions and stuff. So there are people like Kim Coates has a copy of it and from Sons of Anarchy and stuff. And, you know, Lachlan Monroe has a copy of my movie, you know, like people I've met and I think, oh man, you know, I'm just going to give them a copy. The coolest thing is I gave a copy of my movie, Ernie Hudson. And, because I gave him a copy of my movie, he gave me he signed a picture for free.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So that was neat. You know, that was a cool experience. I just like, I came up to it. I was like, hey man, I don't have money for a picture or anything, but I just wanted to give you my movie. And he goes, dude, here you go. You know, Martin Cove, same thing. Martin Cove just was like, what picture do you want? Cause we bonded over the fact that I'm friends with his son on Facebook and we've talked, you know? So it was like the next day I saw him and he was like, I told Jesse about you that I ran into you and stuff. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
That's yeah. Right. Jesse and Martin were in a Asylum movie together. D-Day, what was it called? D-Day something. Had Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell, the UFC nice. Fighters. And so Cove, Martin and Jesse were both in it too. I can't even think what it was called, you know? My memory is just like, there's so many movies now. I get all these movies just confused after a while.
Well, I'm happy because, like, now that Cobra Kai kind of brought them back, you know, brought at least Martin back and definitely William, who I also met, William Zabka, you know. William was really nice, too, you know. I wanted to do an interview with him, but he's on video, but he said he doesn't do interviews at conventions because some douche did one and was completely rude to him, you know?
Oh, and after
that, it kind of made him, you know, not want to do it, you know? Damn. And I don't blame him. So I told him, I'm sorry that that happened. And I totally understand, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, that's the kind of sucky thing with when you kind of meet quote unquote celebrities, you know, period, you know, like people you and celebrities can mean anyone that you like, you know, hold up higher than, you know, David Dakota, I'm sure is a celebrity to you, you know,
oh, yeah.
and everything. But yeah, so when you meet them and they're so excited and everything, you know, you have to realize they're like everybody else, you know? You know what I mean? They're like,
they still have bills and, you know, they have vehicle problems and they still got to do their side jobs and whatnot. Sometimes they still got, you know, issues just like anybody else, I guess.
Yeah. When we went to that, Texas Frightmare, that was a pretty good one too. I remember getting to meet, a lot of great people that I'm still sort of like friends with, but also people like big celebrities too. You know,
Clint Howard was at that one, and so was Joe Sholin.
Oh my God. That's like Texas Frightmare is so big, you know, that I totally don't even realize who's there sometimes, you know.
Robert England.
Oh, I remember Robert England being there because I remember him checking in at the hotel, right? I was there like across seeing him check into the hotel. And some people, of course, like went right up to him from the beginning asking for pictures and everything. Oh, wow. I'm like, oh, dude, let the person go to his freaking hotel room, man. You know, like, God, leave the dude alone. What was your first convention?
Chicago, 1996, Fangoria.
Oh, nice.
And dude. The first person I met, I guess, was Reggie Bannister. I was so nervous. I was like 16 years old at the time. Clint Howard was there, Heather Langenkamp, Clive Barker, Ken Foray, Steve Johnson. And I met like all of them too. That's the thing. Nowadays, when I go to conventions, I don't meet every single celebrity, just certain ones.
Well, there's so many.
That's the thing. And everything is so expensive. Like my first convention, everybody was charging what? Reggie Bannister was $10. Clint Howard maybe was 20. Clive Barker maybe was 20, but that was like the top rate was $20. Now they're what, $60, $70, $80?
Mm-hmm.
Horrible.
I mean, if you think about it, it's inflation, man. It's like every year it goes up, period. You know, like the sell. And I mean, it's also the fact that a lot of people get them signed and then sell them, you know? Uh-huh. So like they have to feel like they made money off of that stuff. Which kind of sucks. But my first convention was Texas Frightmare in 2010. And I walked in and I was telling Sid Haig about this because this is really an interesting thing. I walk in and I'd never been to a convention before, right? And so I walk into the hotel lobby. The first person I see is John Carpenter and he's getting like interviewed on a podcast by somebody, right? And I was like, damn, you know, like I was thinking, I wish I could have done podcasts back then, like I could do now, you know what I mean? But anyway, so he's getting interviewed. Then I walk in some more and I see Bill Moseley and Sid Haig talking, like they walk right by me, right? And I'm just like, oh my God, you know, right? I'm thinking Devil's Rejects right then and there. And then I look over across, and there's Kane Hodder going into the elevator, staring at me. You know, and everything. And I'm like, I felt like I walked into Jurassic Park, you know. And I said that to Sid Haig and Sid on an interview. And Sid Haig was like, well, the difference between horror convention and Jurassic Park is the, you know, the guests don't get to eat you. That's in the contract, you know, right?
Oh, man.
And I thought that was, you know, it was cute, but it was funny because it really did feel like Jurassic Park. Like, it felt like for your first time, it's like such an overwhelming, if you're a horror fan, like I am, you know what I mean? It's such an overwhelming, like, did you feel that the first time you went to Chicago?
Oh yeah. I felt like I was at a museum or, like Six Flags, you know, I was like, I want to stand in this line. I want to ride this ride. You know, I want to meet that person and we got to get a photo. and I want to talk to them. And, you know, I kept talking to some of the celebrities too long, and my mom and dad were like, okay, I think we should probably go now. And then I'd look behind me, and there's, you know, 10 or 20 people in line. And I was like, oh gosh, I guess I'm holding up the line. And I kept thinking, this could be my only opportunity to talk to these people, to meet them.
I know. And then you're like, yeah, you feel like self-conscious, like, you know, like, should I be talking to this guy for that long? But probably not.
Yeah, and I still get nervous talking to some of these people. I'm just like, oh, hey, I'm a huge fan. And then suddenly I go blank. I can't even think of their films. I mean, sometimes my friends will put me on the spot. I'll meet somebody and they're like, can you name some of their films? And I'm just like, of course I can. And then I'm just like going blank. And I'm like, oh gosh, I know who you are, but I'm like, ah.
Right. Yeah. You don't know, you know who they are, but you can't remember their names. I was never a big Phantasm fan, you know, like I wasn't huge into that. And one of my friends and I were hanging out at Texas, and he wanted a picture with Angus Scrimm, you know, and I'm kicking myself after, you know, that I never got a picture with him too, you know?
Oh yeah.
But I didn't, because I felt like I was, you know, I'd be sort of a liar in a way of getting a picture with him and not being a fan. Then I saw Subspecies number one. And after that, I was like, oh, why didn't I get a picture with him? Damn it. You know, like.
He was in three Jim Wynorski movies. He was in The Lost Empire. Four. He was in Transylvania Twist, Munchie, and Munchie Strikes Back.
Nice. That is hilarious. Jim's done so much. I interviewed him a while back. He's very vocal about a lot of stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah, he's very opinionated. You know, he doesn't hold anything back. I've worked with him twice now. I wish he would put me in another movie. It's been a while.
Has he been doing anything lately?
Nah, he hasn't done a movie in over a year. He was going to do a spaghetti western type movie, and then I guess that got pushed back. But he did three of those Doggone movies, Doggone Adventure, Doggone Hollywood. I think there was a third one. I can't even think now. Yes. Yeah, Wynorski is one of my favorite directors of all time. I mean, when I think of my top five or top 10 inspirations, Wynorski is up there.
Yeah, he, like, I remember when I first saw Chopping Mall, you know, and everything, and I got to meet Kelly Maroney, which was nice, you know, but didn't really, like, we're supposed to do an interview, and then, you know, with her and, what's the other actress's name that worked on?
Barbara Crampton.
What?
Barbara Crampton?
No. I love Barbara Crampton. Trust me. If I could interview her, too, it'd be solo. The Night of Comics girl with Kelly.
Catherine Mary Stewart.
Yes. They were both there. And they were both willing to do an interview together with me.
Oh, wow.
And then just at conventions, man, things just sort of happen. And then you got to go with the flow. And sometimes you can't get the interviews you wanted because, like, there's just too many people, or people get too tired, or just don't feel like doing it, you know? So it's kind of the sad thing about doing interviews, period. It's like you just don't know, you know?
You know, Catherine Mary Stewart was one of my high school crushes back in the day. Whenever she was in a movie, I had to watch it. I had to watch every single one. And I was so glad that she came back because, you know, she didn't do any movies for 5 years or something, 10 years at one point. And now she's back and busy and just had a birthday. I think she's 64, something like that, and still keeping busy.
Yeah, she is. She's still doing conventions too and stuff. Like, I mean, good for her, you know. I love her. I love Kelly. I mean, I love almost everybody out here in this industry. They're really working hard, you know, trying their hardest to just continue to do what they love to do. And I give them all props, you know, for everything that they do. What's your, I guess, who's the person that you've gone to the conventions and have pretty much just gaga'd over, like went crazy over meeting? I'll tell you mine. I'll, after you tell me yours?
I don't know. I think Ken Foray from Dawn of the Dead, because Dawn of the Dead is my all-time favorite movie. And then Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, I love so much. I have Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3 license plates. I mean, I'm obsessed with that movie. So when I first saw him, I knew he was tall, but oh my God, he's like 6'6". He's just towering over me. I don't even know what I said to him when I first met him, but every time I go to a convention and I see him, you know, I got to talk to him or get a photo or, you know, get something signed. And I hung out with Ken at a party one time, a barbecue party. And then he also came to my birthday party one time.
Nice.
In fact, Tiffany Sheffis was there and she goes, "Hey, look, who just showed up at your birthday party?" It was Ken Foray. I was like, "Ken's at my birthday party." I could not believe it.
You asked him and he came? You invited him? That's awesome.
He would show up. I was like, "Hey, Ken, I'm having a birthday." And this was 2006. So I was 27 years old at the time. And that party was awesome. Everybody was there. Courtney Joyner, Darren Scott. I think Elissa Dowling was there. Jeff Dylan Graham. Chris Watson.
When's your birthday?
June 27th.
All right. We should have another party, man. You know, get all the people there if the quarantine's over and everything, you know, by then.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I hope this thing's all done soon because, I don't know, it's driving everybody nuts, I think, just being stuck inside.
It's giving them cabin fever and it's making people, like, stir crazy, you know? But also, you know, I think May 15th was supposedly the day that everything's supposed to sort of open up again, start opening up. But remember, I think, and they said April something was, you know, so then that got pushed to May. So who knows, this might get pushed to June again, you know. But I'm hoping not. I'm hoping that, you know, they realize, like, because it seems things seem to be chill. You know, as long as people keep wearing masks and gloves or whatever, you know, washing their hands, taking care of themselves. Yeah. But yeah, that would be awesome because I would definitely go. I'm pretty sure I'll still be here. And, you know, I'll see if Jackie wants to show up because I don't think you've met Jackie yet, have you?
No, I haven't met Jackie yet.
Yeah, she, I'm trying to get her back out to doing more stuff because she, for a little bit, she got kind of, you know, tired, you know, of doing, you know, movies and stuff, you know what I mean? And everything. So she didn't retire or anything, but she just kind of took a break. And I think we're trying to get her to get back out there some more. I think we thought about shooting a short film or something, you know, or whatever. We'll see.
Guys do an anthology together?
Yeah, we did Scary Story Slumber Party. She was part of that. And
that's right.
And then we did the pilot to The Invited. And also, she directed a movie of my, like a short, unfortunately, because that was going to go on Scary Story. And then unfortunately, it didn't, you know, things didn't work out with the editor and he trashed it. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I could have sued, but decided not to.
Damn. You know? You got to get payback somehow. You got to get some sort of revenge.
Nah, my revenge was the best revenge is living well, you know. Yeah. I know, and I really believe that. Like, I believe that, you know, I'm going to do what I can do. I've never heard from that. Like, I don't, that editor hasn't gone on to do anything big or anything. In fact, he tried to ask me to, you know, he like asked me if there was another project that he could work on with me. And I go, dude, you screwed over my last project. You know that, right? And he was like, I'm trying to help you out. And I blocked him after that.
Wow.
Well, yeah. So, you know, this industry is just full of different people. You know what I mean? Some people have bigger egos. Some people don't have egos at all. You know, some people are very humble. You know, but, you know, you just, that's like life. That's everywhere, you know?
Everybody's that's different. The thing. There's drama everywhere you go. I mean, there was a lot of drama in Baton Rouge, so I was glad to get out of there.
Right. I'm I didn't like it because I was messing up so much there, you know. I didn't feel comfortable living there anymore because I was sort of messing up, you know what I mean? But also I wasn't ready for that big of a move, right? It took me a while before I was ready to move out here. And I mean, come May 1st, I'll be 5 months, you know, right? And I've got, you know, on Saturday, I'll have my rent paid. So I'll be there.
Did you get your stimulus money yet?
Yes, that's what's paying my rent for the month. And then for May, and then June, come June, I'm sure I'll figure it out, you know. That's what you got to do. You got to hustle. You got to figure things out, you know. I've got a whole month to, you know, to worry about shit.
Yeah, because there's a lot of people that move to Hollywood with like $1,000. And I'm like, you can't even get into a place with $1,000. And then, you know, suddenly they're broke and they're like, oh shit. And they're scrambling. And I always tell people, I'm like, if you're going to move to Hollywood, you got to have at least 3,000 or 4,000 bucks saved up.
Yeah, definitely. You got to do what you got to do. And I mean, that was probably my biggest regret is that I didn't have a lot saved up, you know, because you got to have at least 10,000, if not more. You know, and sure. So I will be that guy that if somebody asks, you know, should I move, I'm going to be that guy that was that guy that told me before, that's what you need to do. I'm going to be like, don't do what I did, you know, learn from my experience and just save up before you go, because that money's going to run out quickly, you know. And if you have at least 10,000 saved up on it actually shows to creditors, you know, the people you're gonna move in with, that, you know, they can trust you, that you have the money to pay for whatever, right? So stuff like that helps. But I didn't know that. I mean, I knew it, but I didn't pay attention, you know what I mean? So you gotta learn, you gotta live and learn, and then, you know, figure it out. But so what have you been up to lately?
I just finished a new screenplay, a spec script. Lots of action. It takes place in the 1930s. So it's the first time I wrote a script that takes place in the old days. So the whole time that I was writing it, I was having to go to Google and say, was this item invented? Was this phrase, you know, said back in those days? And, you know, I had to look up so much stuff because I don't know much about the 20s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to shop that around.
Okay, cool. Yeah, no, it's great. Was it a coronavirus script? Did you do this, like, was it a coronavirus baby?
I actually started researching this back in, like, December or so. I said, my New Year's resolution was to write another spec screenplay.
And I said, you got it done. Congratulations.
Yeah, it didn't take too long. It took 4 months to research it, but then the actual script was maybe 10 days and I'm still tweaking it. But it's up to 100 pages or so, 102 pages. So it's pretty much done. It's just, I can't shop it around now because everything is shut down. So I feel
Can't you do that? Because like companies still have like development stuff that they can do. Like, I mean, you have an agent, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try to get an agent first, but I might wait for a little bit because, I mean, everything is just kind of just down. I don't think the studios are really wanting to buy anything right now. They're kind of
like, I guess, looking to see what happens, you know.
Yeah, I mean, who knows when the theaters will actually open up. I mean, it kind of sucks having all these big multi-million dollar films and they can't release them properly.
Mm-mm. No. That does suck. They can't release it properly, and theaters are going to kind of have a problem coming up. You know, a lot of theaters are already pretty much, since they've been losing like 3 or 4 months, you know, or whatever, you know, like that they're going to just, you know, things are going to start folding, which kind of sucks because I love going to the theater, but drive-ins are doing well, apparently.
Yeah, I just went to the one in Montclair, But it's 35 miles away, though. So it's a long drive, and it's mm-hmm. it's cheap, like $8, $10, something like that.
35 miles away is not that bad now, because it's like there's not that much traffic and there's not as much driving. Even though I'm looking right at the highway right now, there are a lot of cars on the road. I'm kind of surprised about that, you know?
Like, yeah, those people are supposed to be staying home.
I know. Well, I thought they were doing stuff. Like, I thought cops were going to be out more and pulling people over and, you know, like telling them basically, why are you out? You know, if you didn't have a good reason for being out, you shouldn't be on the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah. See, the good thing is with me, I have an Uber sticker because I do Uber. So I think they immediately say, oh, well, he's, you Ubering. Know, he's just doing Uber. Yeah. So yes. I've never been bothered yet.
Yeah, I haven't either. And I've been driving back and forth like 30 minutes away, you know, and stuff, or 45 minutes and stuff. And it's like I go up to Pasadena every now and then, that area, and I like it, you know. It's a cute little, you know, cute little area and everything, but nobody stopped me or anything. I like to stay at home mainly, you know, like I'm not out trying to get infected or infect others, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. But, you know, there's only so much you can do. Like, you know, like, sadly, you don't have a car right now. So,
yeah, I got to figure out what's going on with the thing. I mean, I don't know if it's the battery or there's a fuse, maybe. I mean, and it's 3/4 of a mile away. So it's not like I can just walk outside and just tinker around. It's like, you know, it's a good 15 minutes there and 15 minutes back. So it's a chore just getting to the vehicle.
Damn. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for being on the show. Is there anything that you didn't get to mention or plug?
Yeah, because I can't really plug either of my projects. Like, I have a TV pilot, but we don't know when it's going to air. I can't talk about that. It was 91 days of shooting. It was a huge paycheck. So it was a blast. It just, I wish they would let us announce something. They don't have a trailer or promotional stills. And then I'm writing a movie that's supposed to shoot in Massachusetts, but again, you know, the Corona thing, it's like, who knows when that's gonna, you know, go into production.
Well, thank you. I do have,
I just got all these movies from Jeff Leroy. Here's Giantess Attack.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
So I got like 10 copies of that. It's been selling really well on Amazon.
Are you so do you have any in your own collection of these movies?
Oh yeah, in fact, let me turn on the kitchen light. This is my collection right there.
That's it? For some reason, I imagined you'd have a lot more than that.
Well, I've worked on 95 features, but...
Oh, that's the collections of your movies.
Well, yeah, these are the movies that I wrote or directed or produced.
Oh, acted in. I thought you were saying that that's your whole collection of DVDs that you own.
Oh, no. In fact, here's some of my movies up here.
Just so everybody knows, Wow, you've got a lot.
I got way too many movies. I mean, plus that's not even, see, here's a drawer I got to pull out. Let me see if I can.
Jesus, that's a lot. Oh my goodness. I wish you guys could see this because he's got a lot of fucking movies. have you watched all of them or no?
I probably watched 70% of them, I think.
Yeah, I'm probably about the same. Maybe I'm 50%, you know? Like, there's so many I should watch. It's just I keep buying them before watching all of them, you know? Uh-huh. And my buddy Paul, my co-host, he'll watch way more than I will, you know, right? Because he'll watch it, like, every day. He'll watch something new or something, you know? I can't do that, you know? I'm sort of like Jackie's kind of like me too, where we like to watch a lot of the same thing over and over again or something. You know, like I'm rewatching Law and Order Special Victims Unit from the beginning, you know, just because You know, I just enjoy it, you know, like there's no rhyme or reason as to why, but, you know, plus it's just nice to go back and start watching it from the beginning, you know? And then, you know, and then I'll watch some stuff new or whatever. Like I watch Twin Peaks, you know, and, trying to watch all these B movies for B movie lockdown. My favorite so far of the ones I've done, I think the one that has topped everything is Python. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah, with Jenny McCarthy.
Yeah, well, briefly.
Casper Van Dien, was he in it?
Casper Van Dien, Robert Englund, Sean Whalen.
It's a fun film. I like it.
Will Wheaton. Good God, it had one of the biggest fucking casts of people I knew of, right? You know.
Then there's Boa versus Python also, and then there's Python 2.
There's Python 2, which I eventually want to see. I have that set. It's over there somewhere. But I have a set where it has Python 2, Boa, and you would think it would have Boa versus Python, right, if it's going to have all three of those. And then it has Venomous or something, you know?
Oh, yeah, directed by Fred Olen Ray.
Was that directed by? Good God.
Yeah.
I didn't even know that. Now I need to see it before I do an interview with him.
Yeah, it's one of his better movies.
I hope I do it tomorrow. We're going to figure that out because, you know, he's set up for tomorrow, but he doesn't do Zoom. So I'm going to see if we can somehow figure out if he can call in. Unlike you were not able to do that, you know? So
yeah, all this technology, it's difficult to figure these things out.
Right. And if you're not really technical savvy, you know, like and everything, I'm not, you know, so I have friends who tell me what to do and how to fix this, you know, situation. So hopefully that's what happens. But, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show, dude.
Thank you. And thank you, man. I got
even
to promote
it's the writer's process. We didn't really talk all about writing, but I didn't assume that we would. I assumed more of it would be about everything. So, you know, but we did get a little, let me ask you real quick. I always like to ask everybody this, at the end. So what are your writing habits? Do you have any, do you like to write inside? Do you like to write at a cafe? Do you like to write outside? Do you like to write at night, daytime? What's your, like, what is your writing kind of habits?
Yeah, I always write inside my apartment. I never write outside. Plus I don't have a battery for my computer anyway. I don't know where the battery is. So it has to be plugged in, you know? I mean, I guess I could plug it into a wall, but I don't like all the distractions, all the noise and everything. And I like to write at nighttime. I try to write for 1 hour and I try to make a goal of doing like 4 pages or 5 pages in that 1 hour. I mean, I don't know. I guess I've written 17 or 18 screenplays now and I've gotten it down to a science where I think I get faster and faster. I like to write on 3x5 cards whenever I have a little scene or just a little bit of dialogue or something for the character. I write it on a 3x5 card. And sometimes I'll shuffle the cards around and try to figure out what order should these people get killed in. You know, like
nice.
It's got to be a game of some sort, you know, so the audience hopefully doesn't figure it out.
Right, right. You gotta twist it somehow. You know, that's the thing. Everybody's got to do the twist. I was actually watching a movie called Asylum back in 1996, starring Robert Patrick. I don't know if you.
Oh yeah, I know that movie. The opening titles is so awesome. It's so quickly cut.
Yeah, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. It was cute. It was kind of a nice. The only problems I had with it was I didn't understand what the point of Malcolm McDowell was at all in that movie. Like, I thought he was supposed to play like the killer, but then it kind of turns it a little bit and he's like helping the guy. And then I'm like, then what was the point of him like escaping, you know, and then joining the asylum as like the doc, you know, or whatever. Like, I just felt like that was a waste of a cool character. They could have done more with him, you know?
Basically, he was just brought on board for name value. I think because it was HBO world premiere back in the day, if I remember correctly.
And, yeah, and they had Henry Gibson to, you know.
Oh, wow. That had to be one of his last movies, I would think.
Yeah, and he did a wonderful job. It was great. It was awesome seeing that movie. What is it? But I really enjoyed it because it was one of those films that was just sort of fun, you know? Like, it didn't take itself too seriously. You know what I mean? Like, and that's what I kind of look for these days, you know, when I watch a movie. I mean, it wasn't the greatest movie. I think I rated it 3 or something, you know, like out of 5, you know, 5 being the best and, you know, and stuff. But I thought it was pretty decent, you know. Robert Patrick got his own freaking movie. Congratulations. You know, I wish he could have done more, you know. But,
yeah. I think I still have it on tape. I taped it on HBO back in 96. And, gosh, I don't think I've seen it since then.
Well, it was on, like, one of those 10-packs. It was on this 10-pack right here that has, like, some amazing movies, like Legacy of Evil, Dark Spirits, Feeding Grounds, The Shadows, Netherworld.
Oh my God, Netherworld is probably Full Moon's worst movie.
Ugh, can't wait to watch that. And then, like, you know, and then of course, like, Blood Predator and some other stuff. So, you know, it's great. Blood Predator is all over the freaking place. So, and I'm interviewing next week. I'm interviewing Jared Cohen, who's in that, who also done a lot of work with The Asylum.
Yeah, I was in a movie with him called Halloween Night.
Yes, yes. Wow. Wait, is that the old school Halloween Night with, was that the 2010 or something? Was that?
2006. Erica Roby
was in it. Okay, yeah. It had, what's her name? It had Amanda, or no.
Amanda Wagner?
No. I'm really bad because I interviewed her. And I loved.
Is she in Georgia now?
I think so. I don't think she's been acting.
I think she was on my Facebook list.
She was. Amanda Ward.
Oh, yeah. She was cute.
She was adorable. She was one of the Asylum girls that I've interviewed. And I was like, oh, you know, like a big Asylum crusher, you know. And she's like my age. So it's like, it's really nice because either they're really young that work for the Asylum or they're like older, you know, than me. So finding people like my age was, and I guess at that time when I started interviewing people, 2006 for the Asylum, that was like the, you know, like they were my age because that would have been the appropriate age time, you know. But yeah, she was in like Freak Show and King of the Lost World. Legion of the Dead, you know.
Wow, I wonder what she does now. You know, I think I just looked her up not too long ago, but I don't think she had done a film for like 5 years or so.
2016, she had done a short film. And instead of her character's name was Amanda, so I'm wondering if that was just kind of her playing herself or something.
Huh.
Yeah, I guess she's kind of stopped doing stuff. I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know. It's sad when a lot of people just kind of disappear, you know.
Yeah, a lot of the Asylum people just kind of went away.
Yeah, or they joined their own groups, like Tom Downey and that group of people. They worked on a bunch of movies together, like Justin Jones. He was on one of my podcasts too. I think when I was interviewing the ladies, he was there with them at that time because they were about to shoot The Apocalypse.
Oh wow! So
here's a funny story. So I wonder if David will listen. David Michael Ladd or one of them will listen. But I came up with one of their titles, and they will never give me credit for it. I never got a credit for it.
Oh wow!
Because I had on my podcast on, I believe, that episode, which is now gone because Blog Talk destroyed all my episodes. Like, it's all my audio is gone for all my episodes because I'm not paying $40 a month, you know, for their service. So anyway, I was talking to the people, and they said that the original title was Meteor, right? Mm-hmm. And they changed it to The Apocalypse, just because it sounded better than just Meteor. And they go, well, why didn't you just change it to Meteor Apocalypse? And years later, a year later or so, I see a movie called Meteor Apocalypse
that
comes out. And I was like, it's kind of a little coincidental now, you know, like, and so whatever, you know, I love The Asylum. You know, and I worked with them, and I loved working with them. They were great.
I did movies for them. Let's see. I did Super Croc, Dead Men Walking, Halloween Night, 100 million BC. And then after that, they would never call me in ever again. I would submit, you know, I'd send them postcards and send them a demo reel. And I don't know, maybe they just felt like I was used goods. They're like, yeah, he was in too many movies. Let's not use that kid anymore.
I don't know. I mean, they like to use people over and over again. It's probably easier than finding new people, you know? So.
Yeah, they know that I show up on time and I know my lines and I promote the hell out of the movies. I don't know. But they keep changing casting directors, you know?
And that might be it too.
Yeah, I think one of the casting directors didn't like me or something.
I mean, you had a new one and they're just like, who is this guy? Let's not cast him. I don't know. He's been in, you know, maybe that casting director was like, you know, he's been in too many of the movies. You know, all the other people didn't care, but that one casting director, all of a sudden, now you're done. Now you're done in the asylum world. But, you know, that's awesome. So many people can watch Eric Spudick and Asylum films from 2006 to or so, right? Like something like that.
Yeah, too. Let's see, 2005 through 2007. Wow. So by 2008, I guess I was washed up.
you were a has-been at that time.
I opened up Spudick's Movie Empire, and suddenly people stopped calling me. They're like, well, I guess you're running your store, so we won't, you know, put you in our movies. And I said, no, I still want to do movies. I'll just close down the store, and I can just run off and do the movie and then come back to the store and open it up. But
it wasn't an actual literal store at the time.
Oh, yeah, for 2 years.
Well, I mean, did you not have other employees or anything?
Yeah, but they only worked on Thursdays. Yeah, I mean, it was so expensive running the store. I couldn't really have people working because then all the money I would make would just go to their payroll. Plus, I noticed whenever other people would work at the store, sales would go way down. And I was like, guys, you got to hustle this stuff. You really got to promote. I think they just... I don't know. Some of them didn't care.
Right. Well, like, you know, was it a store or was it a rental store?
Yeah, we just sold movies. We had comic books, video games, posters. We had a lot of stuff, record albums, CDs.
Wow.
And someday I will have to reopen the store, man. It was a lot of fun. We had autograph signings. We did screenings. We did a lot of stuff. We shot some movies in there. D. Wallace Stone did a movie there.
It's so funny. I'm looking at the Collision Earth thing, and they said, this month, don't miss out, right? And they said August 28th.
Yeah, it's April 28th.
Yeah, that was a big... See, that's the asylum for you, you know? Like, oops. Gosh.
And so you just shot that in January?
Yeah, that's how quick they are. I think In the Drift will probably come out in May. It's gonna be my guess. And In the Drift, I'm really excited about because I got some insider information on how awesome it's gonna be, you know. And I can't wait to talk to Jared about it because, you know, he got to work with DMX and, you know, and I guess I should have asked James Cullen Bresick about DMX, you know, because he got to work with him on Beyond the Law, you know.
Oh, that's right, Steven Seagal.
Yeah. That was really good. I don't know if you saw it or not yet, but it's
really good. No, I was I was tempted to buy it over at Walmart. It was like $15 though, and I thought, well, do I want to spend $15 and just watch it once, you know? And maybe I'll
I don't
check
know.
it out.
I actually might watch it more than once. Might show it to people because I actually really enjoyed it. So yeah,
did it have commentary?
I don't think so. I think it might have had interviews or something, but I mean, that's once again, that's another thing that I'm just kind of disappointed by is like the more bare bones stuff, because distributors just want the movie pretty much, you know, these days. They just quickly get you the movie and then they'll put it out, you know. Sometimes they don't even put the commentary out when people send the commentary track, you know. Distributors, I don't know, I guess it takes longer to code, you know, all that stuff in there when they could just put the fucking movie in together and put it out. Like I feel like distribution's getting lazy, you know. Or plus they don't really expect that people are going to care about that, you know. Right.
Yeah, yeah. I think because DVD sales have gone down so much, piracy, and then there's Netflix, Redbox, you know, it's people just aren't buying movies like they used to. And so yeah, there's a lot less bonus features. Like I picked up the DVD of Don't Kill It with Dolph Lundgren. Fantastic movie, but there's not a single extra on there. I don't even know if there was any trailers. I mean, maybe there was. I mean, yeah. If a DVD doesn't even have trailers, I mean, that's just really lazy. You might as well just buy it on a VHS tape.
Actually, even VHS tapes have trailers.
Yeah, and sometimes the old ones, Full Moon Entertainment, would have behind the scenes and interviews.
Well, Charles Band talked about that. He talked in his, like, he would do like these talks or whatever, and at Texas Frightmare, he talked about how he was like the pioneer of that, you know.
Yeah,
like, he was the first one to put behind the scenes stuff on videos. And at the time, the distributor's like, nobody's going to care about that, you know, right? Like, why are we doing this? Nobody's going to care. And he goes, trust me, they will care, you know? Light on. Just realizing how dark it got, you know, all of a sudden, you know? But yeah, no, it was, you know, it's one of the things. Charles Band was one of the first people to do that. And I thought that was freaking awesome, you know? He's such a nice person too, like very easy to approach, you know. Did you meet Charlie?
Oh yeah, I've met him 3 times now. I ran Full Moon booth one time.
I've met him. Oh, I've met him 3 times. Holy crap, that's funny. I met him on when he did his roadshow thing, and I got him to sign Ginger Dead Man. And what was the other one I got him to sign? Or was that it? You know, that was it at the time. I might have bought something else too, but for Evil Bong, I might have bought too. But I think I just bought Ginger Dead Man. And then, which I love, absolutely adore. I think that's the silliest, goofiest, fun movie. We did it for Indie Film Cafe, of course, in the second season. And then, what is the other one? And then I met him at Texas Frightmare twice, you know. Recently, you know, I met him, and I also met Robin Sidney, you know, who's in a very cute girl that acts in all the Full Moon movies.
Yeah, she's at least 20 years younger than him, isn't she?
Yep, I don't.
That's the way to do it, man. When you're famous, you can date any actress you want.
I know, seriously. But I don't even think it's like that, you know? Like, I think. Because I've seen them together, you know, and I can kind of tell, like, they really, like, you know, like, they respect each other, you know, kind of thing. And I'm like, that's wonderful, you know. I mean, she's really sweet, hugging everybody and talking, you know, like, always smiling, you know, it seems. And I adore her and I adore him. So good for them together, you know.
Yeah, pumped up for those Deadly 10 movies. That
did you see Ouija Nights or something?
Yeah, what is that called? The Ouijas or something?
Yeah.
The trailer looks really good. I haven't seen
it. It's out. It's available. So like Meet the Ouija's or something is like available. So that one's out on Full Moon Streaming. And so is a couple of the other ones. Yeah. I haven't watched them, but I'm kind of disappointed because like I was expecting they kind of pumped it up to be a lot bigger than it was going to be, or like how it was going to all come out around the same time. And it's taken them longer to make, and you know, they didn't have everything as organized, I guess. And the worst part was they were going to have like the live videos. You know, if you're a member, you got to see the live things, right?
So, oh, yeah, I was checking that out. Iron Cross and Necco, yeah, something.
There were some really bad days, you know, and I was just kind of disappointed because there are some days you can see anything and everything. And then they had, issues with the live feed, mainly because they were shooting places that didn't have internet connection.
Oh, and I think some of these were shot over in Las Vegas, too.
Well, probably Las Vegas stuff, they had better reception, but some of the places where they're like out in the middle of nowhere or something, it would mess up the whole time, you know, it's kind of a bummer, but you know,
but the big question is, when is Charles Band going to hire us to direct one of his movies?
I don't think that's gonna happen, but I think you have to be in with the crowd, you know, you have to already know him for years before he'll give you the shot, which is fair, you know. It's not like David Sterling who will say, hey, can you make me a movie right now?
I'll give you pizza. David is really spur of the moment. He doesn't really think too much. He's like, just go ahead and make the movie, and it's like, oh, okay, I don't need a contract or anything. I mean, are we gonna talk about this project? He's just like, just go make it.
Just go make the movie, go write it, and we'll get somebody else to direct it. And you know, like, and that's, it's wonderful if it works, you know. But yeah, I think, yeah, for Full Moon or even The Asylum, it's got to be like who they know, you know what I mean? Because The Asylum already has like a good group of directors that work with them constantly, you know. And they can just call up and say, hey, do you want to direct this movie? So if you get invited to direct an Asylum movie, you know, or whatever, you know, that's awesome. So.
Yeah, I sent resumes to The Asylum probably 8 times or 9 times over the years. And I can't even get a writing gig with them. So I gave up about 2 years ago, I think.
Well, maybe you can get back into acting with them. Maybe they'll have you come back out for another thing. It's been a while since you probably, you know, talked to them about acting.
Yeah, well, I did submit to Scott. I can't even think of his last name. He's a casting director. And I've emailed him and sent him demo reels and postcards. And I'm sure I'm to the point now where they're like, you know, this guy's bothering us too much. We're not gonna put him in any more movies. We're going to put him on the blacklist.
You're blacklisted from, oh, man. That's crazy.
I do have to say, though, David Latt was instrumental in helping me get onto the TV pilot last year. The producer of that called up, and he goes, yeah, so we called David Michael Latt, and he said very good things about you. And I said, wait, how did you know I worked with him? Because I was looking at your IMDb, and I saw that you did some Asylum movies. He goes, I called up David, and he said very nice things about you, so we're going to go ahead, and we're going to cast you for the show. I said, wow. And so I emailed Vlad, and I said, thank you so much for saying nice things. You know, I think it's because of you that I helped get onto the show. So that was very nice of him.
Yeah, no, that's sweet. You know, I mean, I'm sure he's not going to say, oh man, that's Budic. Oh, we don't ever want to work with him again, you know, right? You know what I mean? Like, most people don't do that. Most people say nice things about others because, you know, like, why not, right? You know,
like, plus word gets around too fast nowadays with Facebook and Twitter and everything.
I know, like, if the guy said, oh, you know, David Michael Latt said some nasty things about you, you know, right? Imagine what you could say on Twitter, you know. Power of Twitter.
Oh man,
I honestly hated Twitter for the longest time, and
I still do.
I don't hate it, but I don't. Facebook is my master, you know, and shit. Instagram is like my least favorite, so I'll take Twitter over Instagram any day.
I know on Twitter, if you post something, hardly anybody ever responds. You know, the algorithm is just horrible.
Well, same thing with Instagram. I mean, like the best thing I get is out of Facebook. You know, more people react and say stuff and communicate. Twitter is pretty good. Twitter's pretty good with. I get a lot of movies. You know, they set up movie pages and they'll contact me and stuff. And so I've got a short film that I'm going to be reviewing. And you know what I mean? Like I get things out of them. So I think that's wonderful, you know? So, all right. Well, thank you once again. I keep talking, keep going on and on and stuff, but really appreciate this because this is a lot of fun. I love just talking movies, you know, and stuff. Especially with people who are like-minded individuals.
Movies we'll have to are the best thing in the world.
I know. We got to get you on Indie Film Cafe at some point, you know, especially with the Zoom stuff. I mean, all you got to do is literally call this up and then we can get you on the show, you know? So we'll have to do that. Or when we can actually have everybody kind of hang out, you know, like in shit in real life, IRL, you know?
We'll yeah, do man.
we'll have to do that. But especially since I've got more movies that need to be seen that aren't on Amazon or Tubi, you know.
Heck yeah, we'll have a movie marathon or something.
Definitely. I love those. Bad movie marathon, you know. I remember I did that for a full moon night for my birthday back in 2017. And that was one of the first times that Paul and I and one of my other friends, Vittorio, got together and we chit-chatted about, you know, we watched Head of the Family and a bunch of other full moon movies. I think also Crash and Burn, maybe, or Robot Wars. I think it was Robot Wars. Wonderful movie, if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, Robot Wars, I think, is a lot better than Crash and Burn. It's not as fun.
It's not, but it does have Bill Moseley, and Bill Moseley does such a great job in it.
That's right. Isn't Bill Moseley, is he a cyborg, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember he had some like makeup or something, and he has this cool gun.
Exactly. So he was fun. All right. Well, let's chat later. This should be up sometime in May. So
awesome.
You know, so you can plug it. And we will, you know, we'll have you back on. I think you're going to come on Indie Film Cafe at some point and we'll have you review a sneaky movie with us. But I think you're going to be like Paul a little bit where you're going to say it's lower than a lot of other people's whenever we pick something because yeah. You've seen worse, you know, uh-huh. That's the problem is like, you'll think, oh, this is actually not that bad compared to these other movies that we've seen.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of really bad movies, so I'll have some stuff to compare it to, you know?
Wonderful. All right, man. Well, thank you so much, and I look forward to having you on another show at some point.
Awesome. Thank you, man.
Okay, have a good one, dude.
Okay, have a good night.
Okay, bye.